So as a byproduct, I see with first-time buyers, they get a product, so they get finance, they get a mortgage or whatever it may be. And then they're kind of let on their way in the world with a piece of paper that says, you're good enough to get X amount of money. But the reality is, if I sent you out on a boat and you have never been in a boat before, you're not going to be leaving the port. So you're going to be sitting in a boat wondering, what's a rudder? Where do I go? Which way is Spain? And then you kind of almost have this paralysis analysis. With property, you're kind of like a toddler with a handgun. You're kind of let out there running into viewings. And I don't mean that to jar people, but a lot of it is your time is so important. And you're a first time buyer, you're heading out there, got money, but you kind of really don't necessarily know what else you're going to do. And you're dealing with a competitive market. It's frustrating. It's challenging. It's also one of those very kind of disillusioning things, because in an ideal world, if you've got 300 grand to spend, 500 grand to spend, you should be able to go to the proverbial property shop and buy something and begin to live your life and then level up as you go along. And at the moment, there's an area of society where that's just not happening because the opportunities aren't there.
Welcome back to Platinum Property Podcast. In today's episode, we're joined by Andrew Rattigan of Rattigan Real Estate. Andrew runs a bespoke property buying agency in Dublin. He specializes in high net worth clients, executives and expats. With a sharp, discreet and results-driven approach, he saves his clients over 80 hours a month and up to 8% on property value. A trusted problem solver, Andrew takes the stress out of buying property, handling every detail so his clients can focus on what matters most, living. We really hope you enjoy today's episode.
Okay, legends, welcome back. And this week we have a great, great guest in studio with us. Andrew, thanks a million for coming into the studio. I'm going to give a quick rundown of Andrew and what he does. And then we're going to have a fantastic podcast with plenty of notes. So take as many notes as you can down. As you know yourself, re-listen into this one. And don't forget to connect with us as well. Okay, so what we try and do in this podcast is try and take as much value as we can out of it and give as much back into our clients and our listeners. So give us a little bit of a rundown of what you do and maybe a little bit of your past life as well.
Yeah, no problem at all. So great to be here, first of all. Super setup. So essentially, I started originally in property agency nearly 10 years ago and thoroughly enjoyed it. That's what general estate agency is. But I think what I noticed the most about property was working with people. And I originally studied psychology in college. And I think it played throughout my life. Psychology and people always played a role in what I did. So I could have been selling cars. I could have been cleaning in a hospital. The common thread was that kind of problem solving element. And when COVID hit, I noticed an opportunity to set up my own agency with a difference. So I really tried to start off leading with myself authentically, not trying to take a template of what works for a estate agency. And I noticed there was a real yearning for people to have to be guided through their property journey. So I started off as a generalist, you know, letting, sales, everything else. But then as we progressed, I began to see a model where buying became far more centric to how I like to do things and the type of people I work with. So as I built it out, I just had more people be referred to me, essentially asking for guidance, giving me a muddle of issues that they might have in their lives, putting it all on the table and then kind of pushing it to me and saying, can you help? And I think in property, a lot of the time people assume it's very transactional. So I tried to do away with the transactional idea and turned it into more of a consultative advisory capacity. And then I just continued to build it. And the more I built it, the more I realized I was leaning into how I do things. I was leaning into how I work with people. 90% of it isn't property. It's usually the people.
Yeah.
Because everyone has a story. And once you understand that, you can then deliver on the property side. And I've just continued to double down on that basis ever since.
Good stuff. So it's a real unique business. I don't see too many of them people specializing in what you do around Dublin. And, you know, for myself as well, when I'm going in to buy a property, especially when you see a group of people that's going in to buy and they really don't have a clue what they're buying. I think what you're doing is you're giving, you know, a specialized person, you know, the comfort of buying and obviously having your trusted advisor beside you. And you can look at a property and say, okay, this is a good property and it does meet your needs. How do you feel about first-time buyers when you see them queuing up, heading into properties and looking? What do you feel that they're buying? Like, are they buying completely blank? Do you think any of them are like slightly educated at what they're buying?
I think that if we look at it very simply from the point of view of supply, like we all know the property market is kind of broken and it has been for a long time. You don't have the level of units being built each year. And in the short term, it's very easy to overlook the knock-on effect. But as we keep doing that, like time keeps moving on, kids grow up into adults and those adults need somewhere to live. So as a byproduct, I see with first-time buyers, they get a product. So they get finance, they get a mortgage or whatever it may be. And then they're kind of let on their way in the world with a piece of paper that says, you're good enough to get X amount of money. But the reality is, if I sent you out on a boat and you have never been in a boat before, you're not going to be leaving the port. So you're going to be sitting in a boat wondering, what's a rudder? Where do I go? Which way is Spain? And then you kind of almost have this paralysis analysis. With property, you're kind of like a toddler with a handgun. You're kind of let out there running into viewings. And I don't mean that to jar people, but a lot of it is your time is so important. You're a first time buyer, you're heading out there, got money, but you kind of really don't necessarily know what else you're going to do. And you're dealing with a competitive market. It's frustrating. It's challenging. It's also one of those very kind of disillusioning things, because in an ideal world, if you've got 300 grand to spend, 500 grand to spend, you should be able to go to the proverbial property shop and buy something and begin to live your life and then level up as you go along. And at the moment, there's an area of society where that's just not happening because the opportunities aren't there. But what happens is people then get desperate. So they then start to think that being busy for the sake of busyness sake is what's going to get the results. So they'll go to viewings for the sake of it. They'll bring loads of people. They might send other people to other viewings. And then they start to interact in a way that if you put it in any other setting, it would be crazy. So it'd be like having a board meeting and someone suddenly jumps on the desk and starts like shouting.
Yeah.
That's disorder.
Yeah.
And what happens with property is people try to do the best they can with the knowledge they have. But then if there's 50,000 of them in a certain area, that's going to be nothing but pressure, going to be nothing but disappointment. And then also that has a knock-on effect on people's general rhetoric. They don't like agents, they don't like the market.
Yeah.
Frustrating.
And with agents that you see as well, and especially for us, if we're looking in at the property market, and you know, I have to be careful how I say this as well, because when I'm selling a property, of course I want to see a lot of people, but for someone coming to a viewing to either rent a property or to buy a property, it has to be straight away confusing for them. Because number one, probably never bought a property ever before, especially if they're first-time buyers. But they're going into a property and there's so many different things that could be wrong and it cost an awful lot of money to fix. And then all of a sudden they're looking behind them and they can see that the agent has brought maybe 25 to 30 people queuing outside. So naturally they're thinking straight away, we want to get the biggest. I mean, is all we seem to hear is everything's going through the roof and, you know, is there a different way we could change the property world where people aren't, you know, 25 to 30 viewings. I seen a viewing the other day by a good agent, but there was like a queue literally going around the corner. You know, is that the right way of doing the property market, or do you feel that there's a different way agents could change that?
It's interesting because I had a great conversation with an agent on the weekend. Really great guy. He's been in the business a long time. And he was saying the much more controlled quality style of approach was actually during COVID. But to send in your approval, viewings were booked. So you could have five or six people go to a viewing, knew they were approved. They communicated to you the same way. They were coming to a viewing, and if they made a bid, that you kind of had a better line of sight. And obviously that was a very quirky, unusual, scary period of time in everyone's lives. It was a real unknown. One minute the world was ending, next minute the world was okay, all things considered, and property went up in terms of value. But when you look at what happens with any agent, it's still a very archaic system because you're relying on one person. You're giving them 10 or 20 sets of keys. They're opening the door to someone's prized possession. Yeah. And then they're meant to vet people, connect with people, understand where they're coming from, try and get the best buyer profile they can, and then try and get the best bids. So it's kind of a two sides of the same coin, which is you've got an agent who's trying to give someone a good experience, but by virtue of process and the market may not be able to give you the time they'd like to give you. But then it's not going to make any sense if they only open the door for one person as if it was Cartier or Tiffany's, where they let some like Jay-Z in to buy loads of stuff. Yeah. I think it probably is a collective thing that there's a kind of a manicness in the property market as well, which is people get up, throw some coffee into them. They're at the front door of property and they're kind of going at it as much as they can. But people tend not to have a system as to how they do things. So one person might go in, take notes and follow up saying, I viewed the property today. I've got five questions, whatever else it might be. They might bring the kids, they might bring family members. So the challenge for an agent is when you have 70 people in a house, like I was at a viewing at the weekend, 60 people at it, and 58 of them were wasting their time. And I was sitting outside, I didn't even need to go in and look because I knew what was going to happen. And I think the challenge for people is they do the best they can with what they think works, but they don't really pause and kind of say, well, I'm washing my car with a scouring pad and it's not cleaning it, it's just scraping it. Maybe I should think of doing something different. But we're all a product of our environment. So what's happening now is property's busy, not enough properties to go around. People are doing the best they can with what they've got, and what sometimes works for some people sometimes work, and it'll do not hurt someone else.
Yeah, I was talking to a friend of mine the other day, which runs an agency as well, and he was like, Paul, on our CRM system, we've got like 1,027 pre-approved people with no stock.
Mm.
And I think the stock issue is definitely going to cause havoc out there, and that's probably what's causing people to run in. They just want to get their, they know their AIP is going to go out of, you know, it's like a ticking time bomb. Mm. We want. But also what we see as well is when someone is going in to buy a property, well, if the property starts at, and we'll go into the bidding platform now in a minute, because I think a lot of agents are changing that way. But if someone's going in to buy a property, if the property, you know, if a realistic price in the property is 450,000, and this bidding war starts, which is very, very frustrating for anyone buying, and you know, can really, really push them to try and grab money here. Well, if they, you know, if the price goes up to, you know, just under 500, they're scrambling trying to make up the difference. The valuer goes back into the property and realizes that the property max is worth 450, but all of a sudden it's gone up 500. There's a bit of an issue here with the valuers from the bank and obviously the AIP, and you know, you get people then that potentially property deals will collapse. What do you see as a solution to fixing this type of stress that can happen in there?
The really simple, like as a crow flies answer, is just let builders build, because then that'll release the units for people to actually be buy. But this was the moment, that's not going to happen. Ironically, it's going to take time. But so if we take it, the market as it stands for now, I think there's a couple of things that people can really do, which is I try and equate it to a car, because sometimes it's an easier process to kind of work in your head. So if I gave you 30 grand to go and buy a car, you're not going to go to the Ferrari showroom and him and haw over trying to get XYZ. Or if you go in somewhere, you got 30 grand and there's a section that's kind of 50 grand plus, you're not going to try and make it work. 50 grand. You're going to maybe try and make it work for 35. You might have a cutoff or something that has all the trimmings. But when you look at houses, I think you have to imagine that you're working with an imperfect system. So like what's fair isn't necessarily what's going to fix it either or make it easier for you. But if you work within the parameters of how you do things, if you have a certain budget, when you're working with online bidding platforms, it tends to be like eBay. So you're kind of creating this feeding frenzy. People, like you said, they kind of like to tick the button where they kind of bid and they kind of get caught up in the process. But if you get really clear on what it is you want to have, I find that have to have versus nice to have as part of your checklist keeps you really honest.
Yeah.
And when I meet people, they could spend time looking at 30% of properties that are in no way suitable for them. But it's kind of like dating. They're getting out there going, well, maybe it'll be okay. I say to people, if I gave it to you now for free, would you take it? Oh, no, that's your answer. So you could have people that are bidding on stuff that doesn't matter or feeling like they're missing out on a property. But if my budget was, say, 450 grand, if you're not super clear on your parameters of what you want, you have to be willing to be clear on what you want. And if something goes beyond for whatever reason, step away and keep looking. I think a lot of people spend a lot of energy and time kind of mourning this loss, and they kind of tire themselves twice rather than kind of going, look, the market's a mess. I've seen the same people at all these viewings. Here's someone whose mom and dad have given them 50 grand. More power to them if they're going to do it, but I'm not going to waste time. I'm going to keep looking and get back at it. So fixing it can't really, but what happens is you have people who don't know what they're doing a lot of the time. They do the best they can with that.
And again, if they're after being, you know, for all of us that have, you know, I do a lot of heavily investing in the buy to let space. So I know the pressures of getting a mortgage and it's really, really difficult to get over the line. Things have changed an awful lot.
Usually, yeah. Blood sample and a list of your fears.
Yeah, exactly. So they're probably feeling all them stresses. And then when they go to buy the property, they're just like, oh, I'll throw everything in there. So a lot of agents now are heading on to the online bidding platform. Now, is it taken from an agent? Isn't it taken? Is the personal touch gone? Is people bidding when they maybe shouldn't be, you know, bidding? Is stuff checked correctly? I don't know. Of course, it's great if you're selling a property, but for the person that's buying a property, the trends that I see, because you can log in and you can look at bids on certain platforms and agents that are doing it, sort of hits Friday.
Mm.
Not too much happens. It might be a bid of 400 on the property.
Mm.
So Friday afternoon goes up a little bit. Friday night, a couple more clicks.
Mm.
Saturday night, sitting on the sofa, just starting to talk about how life would look if they owned the property. Another couple of clicks come in. Then all of a sudden it hits Sunday night, the love zone kicks in and these bids start to come in again. And especially if there's a deadline put in the way of that bid. So if they know that property's coming to an end on Sunday night at 8 o'clock, all of a sudden you see this big avalanche of bids coming in. And they're not going up by 1,000. This is where you're seeing properties going from all of the 400 mark to 500, which is a big gap, 20% up. What's your opinion on the bidding platforms with an agency? Do you think it's a good idea? Do you think it's a bad idea? Do you think not all agents are using it, but I think definitely some of them using it.
The best way to describe it to you is that it's kind of a problem of its own making, because two things I look at property. Property is very, very unique, very personal. So as an agent, you may never meet me until you need to sell a property. And then I'm suddenly in your personal space. And the reason why I'm saying this. So you're letting me into your personal zone, which is, I see how you live. I see how messy you are. You may look the part when you're out in the boardroom, but you mightn't live the same way. And that's okay. Everyone's different. But what happens then when you bring in a bidding platform is, in the short term, you're making an agent's life a little bit easier, because someone has to go onto a portal. They have to register, show their proof of funds, and then they click the button. And then the figures come in and an agent can have a good system to log it.
Yeah.
That's the first thing. So we have to acknowledge the advantages of tech. And that allows people to have that eBay mentality where they can check into it, log on, they can see the most up-to-date bid. If nothing's happened, they can touch base, whatever it may be. And let's look at the interpersonal piece, which is an agent who can guide you based on what people are doing. Because I say, like, sales in Ireland, as you well know, nothing is binding. It's a glorified handshake.
Yeah.
And what happens when you're working with people is, just because I give you more money doesn't mean I'm a better buyer. Doesn't mean I'm going to produce the goods. And it doesn't stop me from bidding on 14 other properties at the exact same time.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what happens with an agent is, it's not a judgmental thing, but it's a human condition that if I meet an agent at a house and I see an agent is tired, fed up, annoyed, maybe there's a way to have a conversation where I make him feel a little bit better. Listen, thanks a million for your time. Really appreciate you opening the door. That's rapport.
Yeah.
Then when it comes to bidding, an agent will then have a line of sight. If I sent an email in and I ring you and I say, hi, Paul, thanks a million for showing me 123 Main Street. Look, I told you before I'm fully approved, but email's there and I'm going to put in a bid of 450. Keep me posted. You then have a kind of a thing of, right, I met Andrew. Good rapport, good communicator, told me where he's at and he put his money where his mouth is. There's some element of standing by them. And in property, the sales agent is the only person who sees everybody.
Yeah.
People forget this, because I've had it where a seller would say to me, I know your man's doing such and such. And I'm like, his granny died. And I know that because he rang me in tears saying he's sorry for not sending on such and such.
Yeah.
So when you think of the bidding platform, tech, yeah. Quick, yeah. Looks cool, yeah. But you've no context and you don't understand who's bidding and what's really behind. And I think for an agent, you've got someone who's very busy. It's a very logistical game where you've got keys, you've got to drive. It's like live theater. You're opening the front door to houses that you don't live in, and you're dealing with all that live theater feel to it. And then you're meant to somehow figure out what the bidding is on one side.
Yeah.
So when it comes to online platforms, it's a delicate dance because it's 24 hours. You can log a bid at your own leisure. The difficulty for an agent is you can't set your watch by who you've spoken with. So if you sit down with the seller and you kind of go, look, someone has come out of nowhere and they've made three bids of 15 grand a pop. If they were in a lineup, I couldn't tell you who they were. As in, like, I have no idea where they were coming from, kind of thing. As opposed to, there's someone, they told me they were going to come, they were early, they sent me an email to say thanks, and they came to a follow-up viewing and they bid accordingly. So it'll suit some people and it won't suit others. But the thing I think that agents are going to be challenged on is their skill set, which is that buyer profile and being that communicator amongst everything.
Which is really, really important, because if we're selling, the very first question I will ask is, you know, and we'd use Sherry Fitz or whatever. The very first thing I will ask is, well, we have you, we've got you a fantastic number. Great, that's their job. They've done a fantastic job. But I'm asking straight away, tell me about them buyers. I need to know the top three buyers so I can make a decision, because I've obviously in the background got all these fees collecting up. And,
yeah.
You know, so I think that when the online platforms are there, although they're great and you can see the offers coming in, if they start coming in a bit erratic, you lose control of who's actually, you know, who we want to use, because it's not always about the biggest number. Biggest number might be able to commit in the deal. And for us, and especially if you've got fees kicking in the background, it's about who can commit on the deal and close the deal out properly and get it over the line. That's not going to be, you know, have to go to another valuer and then they haven't got the money to close it and a big mess starts.
But this isn't a jumper. Like, if you and I go to a shop now, you can convince me to buy a bright pink jumper and I'll regret it 10 minutes later and bring it back. if I like a house today, I still have to like it in 6 weeks' time.
Yeah.
I still have to like it in 8 weeks' time. And people get buyer's remorse, except on a grand scale, because they want to win. But then when it comes to a seller, the legal system is so long, the solicitor and the conveyancing can take so long, that if you don't understand who you're working with, it's a collaborative effort, and the power shifts between the buyer and the seller at different points in time.
Yeah.
So once you understand that, if you're taking a layer of that out, you've lost an element of control, but you're doing it of your own free will to get the highest price. That'll work in auctions.
Yeah.
Where you've got someone who's got a few quid, they don't mind taking on title that might be a bit messy,
yeah,
and they know what they're buying. But if you're dealing with someone who's kind of going all in today, fingers crossed, they've sold the microwave, they're selling the car, in 8 weeks' time, when reality hits in, they still don't have the keys. They still have to want it. They still have to make it work. And if another property comes up and they have a wandering eye, do you want that either?
Yeah.
Like, that's all part of it.
This has happened a few times too, which is very frustrating. In your opinion, what would be the most frustrating? We're going to get into what Andrew Radigan really, really does on a daily basis now in a few minutes. But just on the property market again, what is the most frustrating thing you see in the transaction from buyer or seller?
It's still so personality based.
Yeah.
Everyone you meet, you have to have a very upfront conversation about this is what's expected from you. And I think when I work with people, it's not just a case of you're paying me and you're always right. It's like, you're expected to do this, you're expected to do that. We're not going to say it agreed on multiple properties. And then with sellers, it's the same thing. Like, you know, what are you doing? Where are you going? What are you going to do? You're going to want it for the highest price, and it's a numbers game. It is what it is. And I think the difficulty with legals is it's so situation based. Like, I know solicitors and a couple in particular that are absolutely unbelievable.
Yep.
They pick up the phone to tell you they're going to send you something. They pick up the phone to say, just so you know, I haven't heard anything. And I've had solicitors also, when I introduce myself, that will send me a letter from the 1800s that'll say, "Dear Andrew, heretofore such and such, please do not contact me unless you're..." And I'm kind of thinking, there are some amazing people in every industry, but I think the difficulty is that when it comes to the legals, if it's so situation-based, you're going to get one person that may not get the best experience. But I've had deals that have nearly fallen apart because of ego.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if I was in Australia, that would have been signed and done in the space of a day.
Yeah.
And like, kind of, that's it. That's the biggest challenge.
Even the UK, I think, is moving much more quicker than we are. The conveyancing side of things, you think it's the legals not wanting that to move quicker? Do you think it's because there's a lot of stuff happening in court that they may be working on court cases and then coming back to, you know, the property transaction, then maybe towards the end of the week for cash flow? What do you think it is that would be... not making, because we all need to get paid. And I mean, nobody gets paid until the transaction is complete. I'm sure you guys are probably the same, but I mean, like sometimes when you're in a property transaction, you're like, hey, can we just get this piece finished and this piece finished? Then we can all get some funds flowing.
Yeah.
Is there something in there that you think that holds up transaction for a certain reason? Or is it just that everyone in different practices are extremely busy?
I think it like everything, like I'm never a believer in blaming anybody. But I think when you look at the market in general as a whole, the way we still do, when you think of, you know, Land Direct registering land, like that's obviously historic that it's happened in the last number of years. It's still not there just yet. And you still have land that hasn't been registered. When you're buying something, you can't always get a real example of what the folio is like with rights of wales. You've got people that are trying to deal with historic challenges when it comes to property. But I also think you've got a systemic thing in property, which is, in Ireland, it's not always been as cut and dried. It's like, you know, America, we've like a 30-day closing, no contingency.
Yeah.
In Australia, you can have it signed and agreed upon in the same day kind of thing. So I think the challenge is probably a historic thing, which is that's not what's been done. You know, this is what we've always done. I also think there's an element of the changing of the guard, that you're going to have an older cohort of solicitors that have had very successful practices for a long time, and they're now transitioning, and either the legacy piece is coming in, so you're going to have people that are coming in trying to streamline the process, or people who maybe want to say, look, I want to get X more deals done each year, or else I might move into a more area. But I think historically, look, and there's also the underlying Irish thing of it'll be grand.
If the piano falls in your head,
if you can wiggle your finger, you'll be grand. So it's kind of that mixture of that as well.
We are delighted to announce that this podcast is sponsored by Platinum Ventures. Platinum Ventures, we buy houses fast.
Hi Dublin homeowners, are you struggling to sell your property fast in the open market? Or maybe that deal has collapsed? Okay, if you're facing this type of a problem, we have the perfect solution for you. Welcome to Platinum Ventures, we buy houses fast. Any property, any condition, we close out them deals within 28 days.
Put out the stress of having endless viewings and having to pump money into property only to sell it. We are not estate agents, and therefore you will pay zero agent fees. Visit platinumventures.ie today. Platinum Ventures, we buy houses fast.
What few tips would you give to say, again, I know you deal like not really with first time buyers all the time, but like, when we were going to get into now in a few minutes, but if you're just with the experience you have in the field of property, what would be your like two or three good tips you would give to a young couple going out to look at a property in the morning?
So I think, and it's the most invaluable but unsexy thing I do, which is I give people a checklist. And a checklist. And what I actually do is, let's say if it's you and your partner, you sit here on the couch and I'll sit here, glass of wine, cup of coffee, whatever. And I want you to fill out the checklist on your own and I'll film it.
Okay.
And let's talk about the stuff. Because people probably don't realize that we all have unspoken resentments. Like, let's say I hate mushrooms and my mother-in-law insists on putting mushrooms into everything. Even like, I love her to bits, but she could hide it in soup.
Yeah.
And then if I liked it, she'd tell me afterwards there was mushrooms hidden. Right. So if I had a chance and I was sitting on a couch and talking about food, I could say, you know what? I don't like mushrooms. And you might say, I was always putting them in. So with houses, it could be that you might say, I've always wanted a room to do a podcast in. I always wanted a room to play music in, or you know what? I really want a garden. And it could be that thing of, but you never said that.
Yeah.
So when it comes to a checklist, you haven't spent any money when you get a checklist. But what you're doing is you're having that conversation with someone where you get to essentially have a constructive conversation about what it is you think you want, what it is they think they want, and then figuring out how that aligns with the market. So first and foremost, your checklist is what keeps you honest.
Yeah.
Because it then means that I then give people like a very simple structure as to how they're then going to view property. So if you were to say to me, I've got 500 grand to spend, we want a 3-bed in such a location, my have to have is off-street parking and a south-facing garden, right? And let's say that's the mecca of buying. Southwest would be the mecca. And then something comes up around the corner, not a huge fan of the area. It's north, northeast, doesn't have off-street parking and it looks a bit dingy. And I'm not saying that people mightn't have to adjust, but they might shoot to viewing stuff for the sake of it. And then what happens is, if I have a blind date with 30 people, by the time I get to 31, they could be my dream person that I'm meant to spend the rest of my life with. I'm knackered.
Yeah.
I've lost all faith in humanity. I've run out of small talk and I'm wondering what's going to happen next and who's going to pay for the bill. So if you're looking, checklist is first and foremost, because that means you get to have something to core as you're at your core to revert back to. The second thing is when you're going to viewings, don't do any more than 3 viewings on a Saturday if you're going to go to viewings. Again, like speed dating, if I asked you what the color of the first front door was, will you remember it? Probably not. And when you're bringing people, it's not an entourage. Like, you're not Brad Pitt. Don't bring your mom, your dad, your sister, your cousin, your brother, okay? And what I would always say to people is, if you're bringing someone, they want to drive value for you. If you don't tell them what they want, they will tell you what they think you want.
Yeah.
So if I'm bringing Paul to a viewing on a Saturday, I'm going to have a coffee with you before. I'm paying because I'm bringing you to a viewing. And the point of it is, I'm going to say, listen, Paul, don't come to me during the viewing. I want you to look around and look for the stuff you might think I miss. Make a note and we have a debrief afterwards.
Yeah.
And then it means I get to look, ask questions, reflect, take it in. And then afterwards, you might see 3 cracks that I didn't realize or notice that the neighbors have an illegal dog fighting ring.
In the next house you
didn't notice. That's the second thing. And then thirdly, have your cutoff. So it's not always pretty, not always nice, but when it comes to your budget, have a specific cutoff. Don't suddenly start trying to tap people for 10 or 15 grand in the hopes of making it work on this particular basis. If you're going to increase your budget, have a real think about what that means. Have a real think about what that means with those you're interacting with and getting it, family and friends, and only have one person communicate as part of that bidding. So if Paul and Andrew are going looking at property and Paul Green registers to view the house, don't go bidding under Andrew Radley. Keep it clear cut. And when you imagine, you have to meet people where they're at. So you're meeting an estate agent who is busy. He meets 150 people a week. She meets 150, 200 people a week. They're trying to build rapport. They're trying to drive value. They're trying to help and they're trying to profile you. Make it as easy. That'll be mine.
So let's say that we go out and we look at a property. We love it. Mm-hmm. You're a first-time buyer. You're a first-time investor. I'm sure you deal with a lot of them as well.
Mm-hmm.
How do you manage the expectations? We find the property we love. We love this one. Mm-hmm. Andrew, just buy it. I want this. This is the one I want.
Mm-hmm.
How do you balance that to say, okay, well, look, you are buying a property. It's not turnkey.
Mm-hmm.
We're not back in the era of, you know, 100 euro per hour or per day for the tradesman. Everything will be grand. We'll get the roof done. How do you balance that expectation with your clients now? Do you, or maybe even a bit of advice on it for someone that may be looking to think, Uncle Mick will insulate that wall from you. How do you value that? fix on the property, which can be so difficult because I know the expense that comes with these.
I think the two ways of looking at it are, it's everything is always both sides. And I always say to everybody, it's like if you buy a new house, a new house is turnkey, needs nothing, it's A-rated and everything else, that's great. The other side of an A-rated brand new house is you're usually very limited by space. Most of the time you can't extend unless it's a big property. And in the summertime, you're going to be putting fans in every room. So I have an A-rated house. In summertime, the money I save in the winter on the heating bills gets turned into Dyson where I try and keep the rooms cool. When you're looking at upgrading, I always say to anybody, it's not about being pessimistic, but assume something will cost more and work your way back and then get a nice surprise. So like you said, it's not going to be a case of, but this room's a little bit drafty. Mick's going to put in some insulation. He found it at the back of a truck. It only cost him 18 square foot. And he said he can do it next Saturday. Work on the assumption that costs are going to go 30% up. You're not going to find someone for 6 weeks. And then it's going to cost you X. So the two things I say to people are, you have to steel your nerves when it comes to assessing what you want to do. Take love out of the equation. You can really enjoy something. You're by no means done until I get you the keys.
Yeah.
Because you have to be very, very mindful of your emotions. Because your emotions are going to tire you twice if you start imagining yourself in it, buying stuff in a house that you don't own yet, and you're like glossing over the fact that
you're just sucked into this thing already.
The value hasn't been done, and there's a hole in the roof. So I would say to anyone, pessimism gets a bad rap, but controlled pessimism works well when you're actually thinking. Because if you imagine it's going to cost you X and it costs you less, that's far better than thinking it's only going to cost you a small amount and then you overshoot it by a large amount.
Good point, because I see a good few people. I know there's a company going around now doing energy assessments. So you buy a property, it's run down. We want to only get this thing to an A. Okay, well, fucking Jesus, that's 180,000 on that sheet. Mm. Yeah, but it's an A-rated property now. And like 180,000, if you just bought this thing, I don't know about yourself, but I mean, even to save 10 or 15,000, it's a lot of money.
Huge.
So to invest this thing in after you've bought it, you know, could cripple you. So I think there needs to be some work done on the construction side of things, especially when you're buying a property, to understand that, okay, this rewire is 15,000. It's not, can't put it on a credit card. It's going to cost you deeply. And I'd say for your clients, you're spreading all this stuff out and you're showing them exactly.
You have to. I think it's also like one of the things we forget in Ireland and nowadays is we live in a very throwaway society. So if my phone breaks on the ground, I can go to a local phone place, just buy a new one.
Yeah.
And I think property, there's two magic things about properties, that if I take all my stuff off my home, I take my pictures off the wall, my home becomes a house. It's just a house. When I put my stuff back up, it's a home. So when I move somewhere, I'm going to turn it into a home. And when people are buying something, I often think they have to look at it from a contextual perspective, which is, it's not room to improve. Damn you, Dermot Bannon. It's not going to be a case that you buy it where in 40 minutes, you're going to have it absolutely overhauled. It's going to look beautiful. And you have a few quid left to go to the Caribbean.
Yeah.
Getting the property is the first thing. Getting it livable is the second thing. But also people don't want to invest in the not so sexy stuff that people don't see at a dinner party. Mm. So especially I see it with period houses. You'll have someone that'll say, I can do X, Y, Z. I've got a budget of whatever. And I'm going, that's going to change the insulation from horsehair to more modern finish. Yeah. That's going to do your electrics and it's going to do your damp. I say, but what about the coving and the this and the that? I'm like, that's dinner party talk. This is the stuff that's going to get you through the next 10 winters. But when people are looking, a lot of it is getting people centered back to the house is first, get it livable, and you can grow into a house. If I gave you a house right now and it needed nothing, you get a wandering eye quite quickly because it doesn't have your story in it, it doesn't have your soul in it, and it doesn't have how you've grown into a house. And I say to people when they move to a house, live in it now, as long as it's livable.
Yeah.
Live in it. If you decide you hate the front room and you want to turn that into a kitchen, you'll only know because you had your coffee there at 7 a.m. Whereas in theory, you saw something on Pinterest that looked really good, but that's not you. So I think it's aligning budgets with expectations, but also realizing that, like having a classic car, it's always changing.
Yeah,
and have fun with it.
Absolutely. That's what it's about. Property is, for me, I absolutely love the thing. So, I mean, playing with it and changing it again. We always have this fight with our team to say, you know, I would say, well, we're going to turnkey this property like this.
Mm.
And we'd be in the boardroom fighting over, well, that's what you want. We should give a blank canvas. Like, no, let's do it the way we want it. We're like, well, no, blank canvas, let them do what they want with it.
Yeah.
With Pinterest and having a bit of fun with it. All right, great stuff. What I'm trying to think about here now, and it always comes up in the training company, and before we get into Radigan Real Estate, really a deepy of what you actually do.
Yeah.
you probably get this, and it's probably on the top of your mind, especially. I always use the assumption that we're in a market at the moment, and if we take a balloon and we blow the balloon, we're always gauging, especially before you sign a check for an investment, buying your first buy-to-let area, your first family home, of blowing the balloon out. And we know naturally if we keep blowing that balloon, boom, the burst.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you think we are with that balloon, your level of expertise? Do you think we're out here with the balloon? Do you think there's plenty more blown to go into the balloon? Or do you think, is there talk even of a crash coming? Or it's always on the agenda here. Everyone always says, yeah, well, property is great, but you remember the old bad crash there that happened in 2008. What's your thoughts on that? We'd have a debate about it. Do you feel that we're near anything? Do you think we're a million miles away from it? What's your thoughts?
I think two things is, first thing, the Irish love a good failure story. So like, we kind of keep remembering the past. Like, do you remember when? Like, things are going well, but do you remember when? And there's people's lives that are ruined by it. And I absolutely know that there's people that are obviously, they've built themselves back up again. And that's part of life. There's a cycle to property and development and everything else and the way the market goes. No one is a crystal ball. I think all you can go off is what's happening at the moment. We don't have supply. This crisis or this boom, for whatever word you want to use, is not driven by credit. It's not driven by companies that are getting, or people that are getting crazy amounts of money to be able to leverage and then buy stuff willy-nilly. Like in the old days, you know, you could have a plumber that was in the pub and they wrote a business plan on the back of a mat, and then for all intents and purposes, they got 20 million and they were a developer overnight. Now it's been driven by lack of supply. You've got a very international market. Like, we have people that are making Ireland their home. And I think one of the things when you look at Ireland is we're not localized anymore. So the old way of looking at things in Ireland was, if you're on the island of Ireland, you were able to have an opportunity to bid, buy and live in this country of ours. But now, which is a positive spin on the way things are as well, is people are seeing Ireland as a phenomenal opportunity from a lifestyle perspective. And we overlook that because there's a lot of things happening in the world. And this country of ours actually punches above its weight when the weather's somewhat decent.
Yeah.
Okay. But when I'm looking at the unknown, I'm looking at, like, at the moment, units. Like, I mean, you see Cairn and Glenveagh, like, they're trying to build as much as they can. You've got a lot of developers who want to get stuff done. I know a lot of developers that have sites that are sitting in courts and they're kind of losing faith because they want to get on with it. They're excited to build lives for people, because a lot of what drives these builders and developers is the story of giving someone a home. People like to think that it's just, you know, finding a field, turning it over, adding 11 zeros and waiting for it to come.
Yeah.
But there's a tremendous amount of risk in it. And when you think of the market as it stands, it's continuing to move along because, like, as best it can with what it's got, because there is nothing else to do. So when you think of lenders, you'll have people that may have over-leveraged or may have refinanced in certain ways. That's going to have a different knock-on effect from personal circumstances as opposed to the general public. But I think from a supply perspective, it's not showing any signs of changing. I know last week, as at this podcast, potential to put a modular room in back garden, you do something highly doubtful.
Yeah.
In the grand scheme of
the
things.
The level of thinking that goes into that.
Yeah. But at the moment, no one has a crystal ball. And I also think one of the things to remember is, if I was to say to you now, and you're a first time buyer, listen, Paul, the market's a bit wishy-washy. You don't know what's going to happen. It's grown quite a bit. Would you do the rest of us a favor and hold off on living your dream in case this happens? That's not going to happen, because I'm living my life, you're living your life, and people are going to say, well, I'm going to do the best I can with what I've got right now. But the exercise I work with people is, when you're buying something, I always work people through the exercises. If the market fell off a cliff tomorrow, what does that mean for you? And sometimes people are afraid to look at the what if, but once you acknowledge it, you then say, okay, I can manage that, or it is workable, or it may be a case of, I should pause and reflect and ask myself, you know, maybe I'm thinking of moving abroad. Maybe my risk tolerance to buying something that's a bit too high price point wise with my loan to value might be something to come into play. But sometimes it's the case of looking at it, seeing what the potential risk might be. And it is what it is. Like, I say to anyone, like, you know, I could buy, I have an older Merc now. I could buy it today and it's a petrol guzzler, high tax. And if tomorrow it becomes a classic and suddenly it's worth 100 million quid, I'll look like a genius.
Yeah.
But I'm okay with the fact that the price of it might die a death. And that's the point of it. You have to do what you can with the information you have.
And I think it's very, very important that if you are, and you think everything's changing for the better, you can't get money off the banks as easy.
No.
We said at the very start of this, it's very, very painful to get it now. You get the AIP very easy. Again, if you use a good mortgage broker, obviously ask Paul, there's great financial brokerage, and they can show you the financial plan, exactly what you said. What is it going to look like if this happens? And they can plan for that as well. So obviously take good mortgage advice, and obviously you have a good mortgage broker in there helping you.
We are delighted to announce that this podcast is sponsored by Platinum Property Training.
Start your property education today from simply one click of a button. You could be part of the Platinum team. We have made this so affordable for everybody in the country. If you have any interest in property, there is no reason why you shouldn't be part of the Platinum brand. We have got it all systemized. It is right in there with rookies. You can spend 4, 5, 6, or 7 months in there till you get to a certain level. And then you can step up your way through the programs and you can really start to educate yourself. And we're here to help. We've got the best systems in the country. Click the link below and we will see you there. Again, the process of buying a property shouldn't be on your own. Them days, in my opinion, there's just too much fucking risk. Mm-hmm. You have to weigh way too many moving parts. And that's why I think your business is really, really unique, because you've got someone right beside you that is an expert in this. You're not going to be forced to overpay. You're going to be taken back out of this big vacuum of madness happening. Mm. And you can sit down and understand exactly what you're buying, try and take in all of the risk that's in there and make a collective, not pushy decision. What is it exactly you do in your business?
I think
it's a fantastic business, and I think
I appreciate that. I think the best way to describe it is I thoroughly enjoy people, and I love playing a role in someone's life. And I think when I go back to when I was younger, like when I was in college, I cleaned in a hospital. And the best way to describe it is I went in cleaning in an old folks' hospital, kind of thinking I was just cleaning. But then I realized when I saw photos on the wall, I realized this person who's maybe 80 or 90 in a bed used to be in the Marines. And you see this really cool looking guy with tattoos back in his prime. And I remember at the time thinking, I'm playing a small role in this person's life. And as I got to know them, I kind of just got to be a part of their lives in a way where, you know, you might bring them in a box of chocolates or they might be able to tell you a story that they don't have anyone to share their story with. So I suppose at the core of what I do is really listening to what it is people think they want and taking that consultative approach of, instead of it being, okay, you've got X amount to spend, I'm going to take it and shove you or shoehorn you into something that kind of fits the bill and then hope you lose my phone number and don't call me again and let's hope for the best.
Yeah. You know,
that kind of, and then rebrand as something else, right? I look at it that, especially with property, when someone sits in front of me, I view myself as a mechanic or a doctor, that you're telling me X, Y, Z, and you may want something different. And I think it does people a disservice to say, okay, well, you're telling me A, B, C, but everything I'm hearing is E, F, G. None of this aligns with what you're actually telling me. And sometimes I talk people out of doing things. And like I had people who have had companies acquired, they've made loads of money and they come to me with money to spend. And I'm the pretty much outside of their family. I'm kind of the only one that cares.
Yeah.
And I would have someone, I kind of say, look, give it a big life event. Spend 250 grand and buy something stupid. Buy a watch, buy a car, buy an experience. And in a year, still hate your house or you still want to make a change, let's talk. And that kind of summarizes when we work with people. People come to us, they're usually very busy, very time poor. They're usually jaded by the market because they're looking for something specific. And they're doing it, they're slotting it in as part of their busy life. So if you've got someone who's a CEO or a business owner, or an executive or whatever it may be, they kind of slot in a viewing or a quick glance of after my home when they can. But you're imagining that they're taking into account everyday life. So if I'm busy and I'm tired or I'm in a bad mood, I mightn't look the way I should be. If I see something that comes up and kind of fits the bill, maybe I'll go and look at it because I haven't looked at stuff in a couple of weeks. But if I was an assassin and I've got someone that I've got to hit, I'm going to go for everyone. It's like,
yeah.
Wait, bide your time, focus and refocus on what your goals are. So when people come to me, a lot of the time they're quite skeptical because, you know, property market, everything's on Taft and everything's on my home.
Yeah.
And I know a fella who knows a fella and they're thinking of doing this and what is it you can do? But I think it's that advisory piece, which is someone comes to me with a muddled idea of what they, and I say to every single person I know, it's what they think they want and it's not what they actually need. So what I do is I say, okay, you're telling me these things. This is what's happening now. And this is what's on the market, or what's the potential is. And it could be an example of, let's say I had someone who was downsizing and they were buying a big house. And as an agent, you're kind of thinking, oh, the more they spend, the more my fee is and X, Y, Z. But the way I structure things, it's a case of, okay, you're telling me you want a big house. Tell me about your life. Well, we've got 3 grown kids and we do X, Y, Z. I'm like, okay, back to the 3 grown kids. Where are they? Our one's in such and such, the other one's, and they're all abroad. And basically, after 45 minutes, I realized that these two people need a two-bedroom apartment so they can enjoy visiting the rest of their family, as opposed to building a museum that they hope someone's going to visit next year.
Yeah, yeah.
And they haven't come in a decade. So summarizing that, I'm saying to them, you think you want this, you're telling me this, you're showing me that, and then we slot the market in as a byproduct of that.
Your clients there would be really, really intense, high professional people, maybe professional people that don't want to be seen in at a viewing, maybe with
a mixture.
Might be a footballer.
We've surgeons, we've had like sports people, musicians, we've surgeons, doctors, you get some lawyers and stuff as well. But a lot of it is that you've got people that, two things, if someone's famous or someone is high powered, they're used to telling them yes.
Yeah.
And I think we said in our preamble to this that I can see people for who they are. And what I thoroughly enjoy is I can acknowledge your success, but I still know we're all flawed. So I don't get taken in by a watch, a car, or a title. Sometimes people just need someone to look them in the eye and really from a place of kindness kind of go, you okay? What's in your mind? What are you thinking? So when we meet people, they have a lot going on. And what we want to do is give them a space to throw it all on the table. Two things. It doesn't go anywhere because I don't share my business.
Yeah.
And secondly, it means that I can give an objective view without having an ego in it. So if you have a family member that says, you should buy the house up the street, it's lovely. No, I'm not going to buy that. They get their nose out of joint. I'm saying, Paul, you're telling me this. These are all the moving parts. This is what I see at the moment. If you want to pick up what I'm putting down, great. If you don't, happy days. And when you then agree the parameters of what they want, we then do everything. So they're building a business, they're building a career, they're traveling for work, whatever they're doing, we're doing everything. The last week we viewed 11 properties for a client while they were still working. And at the end of the week, they got 11 properties with a full overview of 6 videos and a one sheet as to why they shouldn't buy any of them.
Okay. Which obviously would start, I can only assume, and again, I'm only assuming that if my wife got involved here, maybe I wanted something, she wanted something, you give back the review, we're like, Andrew's mad. Like, why are we listening to this, man? Mm. How do you deal with them expectations of, you know, people in really busy lives? They have to put a lot of trust into you, obviously.
Completely. But you have to call it out. I think the reason why I do what I do is, if I meet you and your wife, I'm profiling both of you. What I'm doing is I'm listening to when she says, let's say she wants to go on holidays and you squirm.
Yeah.
Instead of glossing over it and hoping that we don't talk about it again, I kind of go, I notice you seem a bit uncomfortable. What's going on? What happens is you get people aligned and you have to give people space. So I could have clients where one of them is very matter of fact. They kind of say, look, I want to spend X, just get on with it. And the other one could be relatively emotional, whatever it may be, or might feel disillusioned by the market. I lead with giving people the opportunity to say, look, everything we say here is between us. But I'm going to do a deep dive on things that you're not telling me about. And I've had people who, and it's like when people are selling, you'll come across it, where at the last hurdle you realize there's a divorce. There's an issue with finances, whatever it may be, that they thought if they didn't say it, nothing's going to happen. So I basically front load all of that. And I'm saying, look, we're going to share everything right now. It goes nowhere. And then that helps me make a better decision, but communicate the right way. Because I will sometimes send people things they will hate so they can both agree that they hate it.
Yeah.
If you both agree you hate mushrooms, then at least you're both aligned, as opposed to, well, you never told me this and you never told me that, but I do it with a purpose. So then when we find the one that matters, they both agree and they kind of understand
them. So again, you now find them something. So I've instructed you to find me a property in Fox Rock at this level for 1.2 million. This is what I want. I want the garden like this. I want the back. I want a small refurb, maybe of 200 grand or 300 grand to take place. You come back with a list of properties. You've gone to the market. You're putting in a massive amount of legwork.
Mm-hmm.
You're obviously taking in a massive amount of what they want. You're going nearly shopping for them, bringing them back on the list. What happens at that point? You bring back 5 units. Do you then take them to that view, to that property?
No, we do all the assessment for a property first. So a big part of it is we have people that go out and do viewings, and I do it as well because I think it's important to build that rapport with agents as well.
Yeah.
Is that we do a weekly review of properties. We say, even if it's to include why they shouldn't look at it, we're noticing it so they know we haven't missed anything.
Okay.
And then we might say, okay, there's 5 properties. We've already booked 3 viewings and this agent's giving me the keys to this one so I can actually bring you through tonight if you happen to be around.
Private on their own.
Yeah. But what we tend to do is we'll do the viewing, we'll do the vetting, and we do the unsexy video of this is what it actually looks like. This is what that sweeping statement is in reality. And I really encourage anyone, don't be afraid to say no. So I say to people, a no is just as good as a yes. So if I'm looking through 8 properties with them and we've viewed 4, tell me, no, you don't like the look of such and such. Grant, it's off the list, but we've seen it for you. You haven't had to take time out of your day, not see the kids, or not have lunch with your other half, or not go to a board meeting. we've done it for you.
Because I imagine like really busy people, their time is precious. You know, they only have a certain amount of time to get this particular big thing done. They're putting the trust in you to eliminate all of the bullshit that they don't want to see, hoping that the lump of gold is going to jump out.
It's like a surgeon. Like if I think of how an operating room is together, I have a rough idea of a Hames of how you clean this and what you do that. But you get someone who's a surgeon, they'd be horrified by the setup.
Yeah.
So what I do, it's like, you stick to what you do.
Yeah.
I do this every day of the week. Let me do what that needs. I report back and I save you the time and the energy. And it means that you're not going through the hassle of trying to learn. Because it's like I was saying with accounts. I don't want to learn accounts. I'd rather give it to someone who does it really well, comes back to me and explains it like I'm a laboratory. Keep it simple.
Oh yeah, good stuff. Good. So you now, let's assume that you've done a smashing job. You found me that property, Foxrock. What actually happens then from your point of view? Do you get involved with then starting to bring it to legals? Do you look after that side of things? Do they take over themselves then?
It depends. Everyone's appetite for doing the work at certain stages is different. So what we tend to say is that our job is finished, it's said, agreed, but we're always obviously there.
Yeah.
But we do get a number of clients who say, look, can you help us until the end? Which is, we'll give a couple of solicitors that we recommend. And we do so based on the type of personality. So you kind of say, look, this person's a great communicator. You need to talk to them for this reason. We do the same with surveys. And then when it comes to the ins and outs of the legal process, sometimes they just need someone to talk them off a ledge.
Yeah.
So they might say, your man said they're looking for X. I'm like, that's totally normal. That just takes 2 weeks. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of the negotiator in the middle, explaining the realities of what's happening. And I think a lot of the time it actually demystifies the process for people so they don't lose the run of themselves by miscommunicating with someone else.
Which is another good, good point as well. If you're there and you're representing a high net worth individual, you obviously are going to be taken a lot more serious than just 25 people rocking through the door.
Yeah.
Specifically sent you. So my ears would be like, if I'm selling the thing, sorry, what did Andrew say again? Let's pay attention here, because we've got, you know, a high net worth individual, which clients you work with. At that point, negotiation will take place.
Mm-hmm.
Do you negotiate a good feel you obviously done your research, what you think of the property, you value your own property, obviously. Mm-hmm. But do you put a proposal together to say, this is what we can do, this is the level, it's a little bit under maybe from what where you have it up for sale at, but we can do it in 3 to 4 weeks or 6 weeks time? You negotiate
property,
that?
Yeah, so every property has its own story. So I say that if someone's out just kind of shopping the market and testing what they can get, I try and front load the information for people. So it's not a simple cut and dry. It's like, you know, you go to McDonald's and you're buying something and it's $4.50, whatever Big Mac is now. But if you're looking at a property, I would say to my clients, this property is 1.2. It needs 200 grand spent on it. The buyer is X. And not the person.
Yeah.
But the buyer is a downsizer, they're moving abroad, or they've got a property to into. That changes the dynamic versus someone who is on the market, they have to sell to buy and they haven't found what they want yet. So when you understand the chain and understand the dynamics, we then adapt bidding accordingly. But I vouch for my bidders, and 99% of the time, I'm the one who's bidding for them because I've had sight of funds. So when an agent sees me, two things happen. They know I'm a very good communicator, but they know I'm just not in a jolly.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time is keeping my clients honest and open, kind of saying, look, no, you're delaying for 2 days here to do this. That's not right.
Yeah.
Let's get on with it.
Yeah. Because you've
or let's step away.
You have a reputation to keep
you.
And that's clearly how you can save up to the 80 hours per month for them going around and taking time off their work in companies, or if you're a brain surgeon or whatever you're doing.
Or abroad. Like, we've clients in Singapore, America, and the trust, like 90% of the people I buy for, I'm the first person through the front door. Huge amount of trust.
Yeah, huge.
And you have to be willing to be open and honest with them, everything, rather than pretend you didn't see it.
And that's clearly then as well with the 8% property value, that way you can get the value down and lock it in at maybe a good discount too, if there is a discount.
Or the upside. I mean, I always say to anyone, I will never buy anything for a client that I wouldn't buy myself if it had gone to my head. And not to be like aggressive or violent when it comes to home, but I say, if I stop each time and I run through the exercise of two things, would I buy this myself? Or if the market died a death tomorrow, would this still be a good purchase?
Yeah.
If I can't say yes to both, and I will always work through that with the client, that I then say, right, I'm now happy. So you could have a property that may have upwards value in time to come. It may be in an area where, let's say, 50-foot gardens will be a thing of the past. So this will be something that you can add an intrinsic value to it later on. Or you may be locking in a price today that, with inflation and lack of supply in 6 months' time, the starting price might be the price we agree today. So it works very well.
Yeah, and again, I'd say people will absolutely sign if they're coming. Now, we probably see a lot of high net worth individuals coming out to Ireland because they want their kids to be at Trinity College or whatever it is. And there might be a bit of land at the back of the unit. So you're putting the whole puzzle together for them.
Yeah, but people overlook Ireland. I mean, I think when you live in Ireland, you take for granted what we have. There's nothing like someone who's lived abroad for a decade or someone who's from another country to really put manners on what we have, because we have an amazing countryside. We've got amazing, like, community structure that we overlook. But Ireland is a wonderful place to live. And we probably forget that because we get lost in bad weather and traffic.
Yeah.
In comparison to a lot of places, we're a great all-rounder.
Absolutely brilliant. Again, then, just two other quick questions I have come to my mind. I could talk to you all day about this because I can see a massive, massive potential of people that have really, really high, busy lives. And to have to go into the world of trying to negotiate, run through, it's just probably way too much for someone to take on board if they're extremely busy CEO or they're high net worth individual. So letting that risk lie with you and bringing back the information, massive sense to me. But again, what's one thing about your business that isn't so good? And you might frustrate you in the business.
Probably the logistics is what I do. I suppose I'm the secret sauce in my business virtue of my natural way of dealing with people. And not that I'm slow to trust other people. We have people that we work with that are amazing, but equally their skill sets are different. So I think the challenge in property is not wanting to dilute the value I drive for the sake of growth. So that's why as I've niched down, it's been a case of, right, well, I'm going to charge a certain amount for a certain cohort of people. And if they get it, they get it. If they don't, they don't. Rather than, okay, I'm going to try and please everyone and then try and spread myself too thin.
Yeah.
And then drop the ball for the wrong reasons.
Brilliant. And then maybe one of the things you love about the business.
I've had someone who said to me that they probably at the time, they couldn't verbalize as much. But they basically said that I had such a profound effect on their life that they'd never forget it. And I think that still brings a lump to my throat when I think of something that was inherently natural to me. But I understood that, see, I suppose like I'm good in a crisis. So when someone comes to me with a problem, you're never going to get the head tilt and overwhelm. I'm the best person, not that I want to say I move a dead body, but if something happens, I'm the best guy to deal with because I will be clear, calm, in control. And I think I overlook that as a skill set. So when people come to me and they're a mess, they have a real challenge that they feel they can't overcome. I can deconstruct it, I can deliver it, but I do it in a way where I don't dangle it over their heads. And then the job gets done at the end. I was referred to as like Mr. Wolf in Pulp Fiction, where I kind of just get back in the car and head off. And not that I've helped anyone facilitate a murder, but I just do the job. I do it well and I leave them at it. And I think I probably overlook that role in people's eyes, but a lot of people seem to like it.
Lovely stuff. Well, listen, it's been an absolute pleasure having you in. I know we're going to do a couple more. Congratulations as well. You reached a big milestone in your marriage as well. 11 years married.
Yeah, I broke the 10 years. Yeah, I'm just hoping to make it to 11 and a half now.
Well done. Any last final thoughts?
No, thanks a million for having me. I really appreciate it. I think it's a super location. I love your attitude and your drive and love these conversations.
You're an absolute wealth of knowledge. You had me, not many people put me on the spot, but today I think the communication was brilliant. You're definitely a great communicator. And I think your business is going to go through the roof and it's doing really, really well at the moment. Where can people grab you if they want to meet you or if they want to, I'm not going to say grab a coffee because there's no way they should be trying to grab a coffee with you. But if someone wants to reach out with you and maybe feels that's perfect for them, I don't think anyone, I don't know why in the name of God, when I see people pass through a property and have no level of education whatsoever are buying that thing, they need to have some level of education. If someone just wants to pick your brain, is it just only high net worth individuals you work with, or
I'm a big believer in paying it forward. So the two ways I'd say it are, first and foremost, I love to connect with anybody. So if someone wants to connect on LinkedIn, brilliant, or they want to go onto ore.ie, that's the website. But like I said, I created a free course for people on YouTube. And the idea is that it's someone who may never meet me. And if there's two pieces of it that change their lives, great. And that's something that if someone has a question, I'm always happy to guide. And I'm a connector by heart. So someone might send me a message and say they're lost in this part. I can deconstruct and send them on their way, restoring their faith in humanity. Happy days.
Brilliant stuff. Well, with your, if you're okay with it, we wouldn't mind sending that out as a gift to people that are listening. Maybe no through problem. DMs or direct mail to, I can get Ozzy and the team to put it out. And it's an absolute piece of value for people going in looking at properties.
We also have a newsletter as well, by the way. Every 2 weeks it goes out. So hopefully that'll help. I'll shut the front door.
We never talked about that.
Yeah, there you go. No, you're fine.
Absolutely. Yeah, I seen it. Two more minutes and I gotta let you go.
Yeah, you're
right. How did shut the front door come into this in your podcast?
I think when I look at it, I originally did a newsletter where I was trying to be like the independent every single Friday. And I was throwing as much value as I could for people, but it was quite overwhelming because I was putting in gifts. I was putting in articles on property and then trying to cover a topic. And then I just thought, I'm going to keep it super simple. So I'm going to use my personality, which is humor, and then the expertise piece. And I said, with Shut the Front Door, it's kind of a bit of humor, like shutting so-and-so up. And I said, right, I'm going to do a podcast that's 10 minutes. And if it's not me, it's going to be me with someone else discussing one topic. So I call it my one thing.
Yeah.
And it's only one thing. I set the timer for 10 minutes. And whatever we discuss gets put in the newsletter. So it might only be a small paragraph and then a video at the end. But the idea is to make it short, readable, and actionable for our busy. So you don't need War and Peace in your inbox every day. So I just keep it super simple. And if people want topics covered as well, they can send me an email, a list as well for...
That's brilliant. What we're going to do is we'll send it out to everyone on our mailing list as well, so they can grab it. And just to compliment that as well, as I said to you earlier on, I've probably read about 4 or 5 books in my whole lifetime. I read your LinkedIn. They're so digestible. They're very, very clear to understand. They're really, really easy. And they're full of content. So hats off to you on writing posts. The posts are lovely to read.
I appreciate that. Yeah, it means a lot.
No, I think you're doing a fantastic job in it. So again, people can grab you on LinkedIn.
Yep.
The website again?
Orre.ie. So Or for Rat, Or for Real, E for Elephant. Real Estate.
And then you've got the newsletter every two weeks.
Exactly.
They can grab that on...
They can get that on LinkedIn, or if they want to email us, we'll send down the link to subscribe.
Lovely stuff. Andrew, it's been a pleasure. Thanks a million for filling in the boots today. And hopefully this is the start of probably a lot more of you showing into the HQ.
Be delighted. Thanks so many for having me.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Thanks a million for listening into this podcast. This has absolutely been brilliant for myself. I've taken a lot of notes myself out of it. And for Andrew Radigan, thanks a million for showing in today. And we'll see you at the next one.
And a brief thank you to today's sponsors of our podcast, Platinum Property Training and Platinum Ventures. Thank you very much for listening in.